he categorically denied it. Notice that phrase. Not, I didn't do this. Not, I wouldn't do something like that. Not, this is a misunderstanding. And here is what actually happened. He categorically denied it. The categorically denial is a specific instrument. When you know how it works, when you can hear the machinery operating inside the words, it sounds different than it does the first time. The first time, it sounds like innocence. The strength and totality of the denial seems like evidence that the accused could not possibly have done what they're accused of. That's what it's designed to sound like. That's the function. The case that rocked Germany in March of 2026 involved Colleen Fernandez, a German television personality, and her ex-husband. Fernandez publicly accused him of spreading intimate images of her online. The images in question are alleged to be deepfakes, artificially generated images created using her publicly available likeness, fabricated without her consent, and distributed in ways designed to cause her maximum harm. The accused denied the claims completely. The story went wide. Germany, which had been grappling with the implications of image-based abuse legislation for years, found itself with a case that put a face, a recognizable face, on a crime that had previously been abstracted into statistics. The story is not primarily about Germany. It is not primarily about one woman or one man or one denied accusation. It is about a pattern, one that predates deepfake technology by decades, one that the existence of easily generated AI-manufactured intimate imagery has made more accessible but not more new. In 1984, clinical psychologist Jennifer Fried identified and named a behavioral pattern that she observed consistently in cases where victims of abuse confronted their abusers. She named it DARVO: deny, attack, reverse victim and offender. It works in sequence. First, the accused denies, completely, categorically, emphatically, not just no, but absolutely no. The emphasis is strategic. A measured denial allows space for negotiation. A categorical denial is designed to close that space entirely, to make the victim feel that any further claim is irrational, unfounded, and pathological. Second, the attack. This follows inevitably from the categorical denial because the victim has now, by reporting, created a conflict. In the attack phase, the accused does not engage with the evidence. The accused engages with the accuser's credibility, motivation, and psychological stability. The questions become, why is she doing this? What does she want? Who has coached her? What is she trying to get? The subject of the original harm never comes back into focus. The person who was harmed is now required to defend herself against the meta-accusation that she fabricated or exaggerated or is unstable. Third, the reversal. This is the most structurally elegant component of the pattern and the most damaging. The accused, in the reversal phase, positions himself as the victim of the false accusation. He has been publicly named. His reputation has been damaged. His family has been affected. He is the one who has suffered. The original victim, the person whose face was allegedly manufactured into sexual content and distributed online, is now the accused. She did this to him. DARVO is effective because it works on a structural vulnerability in how human beings process conflict. Most people, when they encounter total emphatic denial from someone they know, experience doubt. Not because they believe the denial, because the confidence of the denial is itself a form of evidence, and we are not wired to discount it cleanly. The categorical denial is not about truth. It is about leverage. Deepfake intimate imagery is the most recent evolution of a category of abuse that has existed since photography. Before digital manipulation, non-consensual intimate images required possession of real photographs. The harm was real, but the logistics constrained who could inflict it, and at what scale. The internet expanded the distribution capability. The smartphone expanded the creation capability. Deepfake technology has now eliminated the requirement that a real intimate image exist at all. This is the specific cruelty of the new landscape. In a previous era of image-based abuse, the victim knew that the image circulating of her was real, that it had been taken in a specific moment, under specific circumstances, and that the violation had a physical history, the violation was documentable. Deepfake abuse removes the documentary history. The image did not come from a camera. It came from an algorithm fed by publicly available photographs of a face, photographs that exist because the victim is a public figure, because she smiled in the background of someone's photo, because her face appeared in a film or an advertisement or a social media post. The weapon was built from material she did not consent to provide for this purpose, but that she could not have withheld without ceasing to exist publicly at all. And when she reports it, the first response from the accused is categorical denial. Now she has to prove it. She has to prove not only that the images exist and that they are false, but that the person she is accusing specifically created or distributed them. Digital forensics can sometimes help. IP logs, metadata, pattern analysis. But the tools of investigation are available to everyone with resources. And the person who created the images, if they chose to cover their tracks, has the same access to anonymization technology as investigators have to tracing tools. The Colleen Fernandez case is significant in Germany, partly because of who she is. She is not a private individual. She has a public profile. She has the resources and the platform to name her accusation publicly, to retain legal representation, and to have the case reported on by major news organizations. The vast majority of women who are targeted by image-based abuse, including deepfake intimate images, have none of those resources. They do not get BBC coverage of their denial. They navigate the process alone, with their employer potentially seeing the images before their attorney does, with their community forming opinions before any investigation has concluded. The psychological literature on image-based abuse has documented a consistent profile of harm that includes occupational consequences. Victims lose jobs, lose clients, are dismissed from professional contexts, social isolation, relationship breakdown, severe anxiety, depression, and in some documented cases, suicidal ideation. The harm is not metaphorical. It is not primarily reputational. It is neurological. The experience of discovering that sexualized images of yourself are circulating online, images you did not create, images that your face was taken from without your knowledge to fabricate, produces a specific form of trauma that therapists who work with image-based abuse survivors have begun to identify and document. The categorical denial compounds the trauma. You now know what you know, and you know that the person who did it is telling the world you are lying. You are holding a wound that the person who inflicted it is calling imaginary. This is where DARVO goes from a psychological concept to a clinical crisis. The victim's own perception of reality becomes the contested territory. There are a few specific things that the pattern recognition this show has been building across its episodes now allows you to see more clearly. When someone categorically denies an accusation, not simply denies, but emphatically and completely and publicly denies, it's worth pausing to ask what that emphasis is doing. Genuine innocence often looks uncertain. It asks questions. It puzzles over the accusation's origins. It tries to understand what led to the confusion. The categorical denial does not do any of those things. It closes. It presses. It occupies all the available conversational space. The reason that deepfake intimate imagery is particularly suited to the DARVO mechanism is that it is inherently deniable in a way that other forms of abuse are not. There is no physical evidence of a confrontation. There is no eyewitness. The mechanism of harm, the algorithm, the training data, the distribution channel, can be made invisible by anyone with the technical knowledge and the motivation to do so. The victim was harmed in a way that leaves no fingerprints except on her. And when she names the person she believes is responsible, he categorically denies it. She now has to decide whether she trusts her own judgment, whether she is willing to remain in public with that accusation while he insists on his innocence, whether the cost of continuing the reversal phase, in which she becomes the one damaging him, is worth the outcome she might achieve. This is the design. This is what the pattern is designed to produce. Not a specific outcome in a specific courtroom. A general effect. The silencing of reports before they become sustained accusations. The privatization of harm that is always easiest managed in private. Germany is watching this case now because Colleen Fernandez was in a position to not manage it in private. She had a public voice and she used it. Most people targeted by this specific form of abuse do not have that voice. The question is not whether the accused did what he is accused of. That is for investigators and eventually courts. The question the pattern invites you to ask is this. When you hear a categorical denial from someone accused of harm that benefits from being undocumented, do you hear evidence of innocence, or do you hear the machinery?